And on Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. A package of incentives that represents a major initiative by world powers to persuade Iran to curb its nuclear program contains, quote, positive steps, end quote, but also, quote, ambiguities, end quote, the country's top nuclear negotiator said Tuesday, speaking on state television after receiving the proposals from EU foreign policy chief Javier Solana. Ali Larijani called the talks with Solana constructive and said Iran would respond after studying the incentives. The United States, along with four other veto-wielding members of the UN Security Council, Britain, France, Russia, and China, drew up the package with Germany in a meeting in Vienna on Friday. Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman John Warner is frustrated with the Bush administration over how his committee learned about the Haditha inquest, and he's demanding answers about why it took 2 months for the White House to tell the committee what it knew about the killing of 24 Iraqi civilians by U.S. Marines. The Virginia Republican has pledged to hold open hearings on the military's conduct after Congress reconvenes. Warner and members of the Armed Services Committee were not made aware of the Haditha investigation until May 18th, 2 months after the White House found out about the killings in March, according to a Warner aide. A coalition of veterans groups charged in a lawsuit Tuesday that their privacy rights were violated after thieves stole personal data on 26.5 million military personnel from a Veterans Affairs employee. The class action lawsuit against the federal government filed in U.S. District Court in Washington is the second suit since the VA disclosed the May 3rd burglary 2 weeks ago. It demands that the VA fully disclose which military personnel are affected by the data theft and seeks $1,000 in damages to each person, up to $26.5 billion total. The veterans are also asking for a court order barring VA employees from using sensitive data until independent experts determine proper safeguards. Billy Preston, the exuberant keyboardist who landed dream gigs with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and enjoyed his own series of hit singles, including Out of Space and Nothing from Nothing, died today. Preston's longtime manager, Joyce Moore, said Preston had been in a coma since November in a care facility and was taken to a Scottsdale, Arizona hospital Saturday after his condition deteriorated. Billy Preston was 59. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Hey everyone, it's Dar Williams. I just signed on to a new program called Empower. If you think you or a friend might have a mental health problem, call 1-800-969-6642 or visit empoweryouth.org.
American and British veterans marked the 62nd anniversary of the D-Day landings today with ceremonies and talks to school children about the invasion that changed the course of World War II. Hundreds of relatives and others joined at least two dozen veterans to remember the June 6, 1944 invasion on Normandy's beaches that helped free France and much of Europe from Nazi Germany's grip. Former Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge laid a wreath, along with the U.S. Ambassador to France, at the American Cemetery in Colliery-sur-Mer, where thousands of crosses and stars of David mark soldiers' graves on a finely groomed lawn. Police found 9 severed heads today in fruit boxes near a volatile city northeast of Baghdad, authorities said, the second such discovery in less than a week. A roadside bomb also exploded near an American military convoy in central Baghdad, killing a woman and wounding 3 pedestrians. The 3-vehicle convoy was traveling near one of Baghdad's bus stations when the bomb detonated. The convoy kept moving. The boxes containing the heads, all from men, were discovered by a highway in the village of Hadid near Bakuba, a mixed Shiite-Sunni Arab city 35 miles northeast of Baghdad, that has seen a recent rise in sectarian violence. The Federal Bureau of Investigation has refused to turn over 89% of Vice President Dick Cheney's FBI records in response to a request for the records under the Freedom of Information Act. In all, the Bureau has released 112 of 1,061 pages reviewed during a 2-year investigation following a request by San Francisco blogger Michael Petrelis. Petrelis filed the request prior to the 2004 election. Portions of nearly all the pages released have been redacted. There's a time and a place for everything, local Australian governments have ruled as they move to stop brothels opening near cemeteries. Local governments in the northern state of Queensland have called on state authorities to establish an exclusion zone banning brothels opening within 220 yards of cemeteries. It follows a decision by a council in Ipswich, just outside the Queensland capital of Brisbane, to reject a proposal for a brothel to be built across the road from the local cemetery. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It is, in fact, Tuesday. It is 6-6-6. Ta-da-da. I'm Bob Kincaid. I am still here. And in fact, if you want to have a little fun, our good friends over at WD40.com, my good friend Clyde, did send me something you might want to... this is handy. It's the Rapture Index. And it says... the recent record high was a score of 182 on 24 September 01. Do you want to see what the, well, Rapture Index above 145, fasten your seatbelts. And so, go have a look. You'll get a giggle. There's another index you might want to have a look at, over at WD40.com. With reference to that, go down a couple of stories down past the alert for Head On, and you can read an article. And down at the bottom, there's a link that says, "Wonder why the terror alert wasn't raised to Ernie." That's right, it's the Sesame Street Homeland Security warning system. Starts with a green of Oscar and rises inexorably and terrifyingly all the way to the red of Elmo. Works as well for me as anything else. I just wonder where the duct tape and the plastic sheeting comes in. Is it replaced by fake fur and foam rubber? I mean, they're puppets. There's that little bit of silliness just to get us started. Before we get into tonight's frivolity, tonight's romp in our little liberal sandbox, and beyond all the silliness of what day, this is a very nice day as far as I'm concerned, because beyond all the right-wing religion industry stuff, it's the birthday of a great little guy I know who turned 6 today on June the 6th, 2006. So a very happy birthday. But it's also a very, very significant memorial. And we should take a moment before we do start our carrying on. And we should remember the thousands who landed on this day at Omaha Beach and Utah Beach and Juneau Beach and Sword Beach and Gold Beach in Normandy. We should remember that generation that is fast fading away. For the heroism and the sacrifice that they made some 62 years ago. Operation Overlord, D-Day. The greatest amphibious invasion in the history of human endeavor. 6:30 a.m., June 6th, 1944. Troops came ashore. Americans came ashore at Utah and Omaha beaches. Canadians, British, Allied forces came ashore at Gold, Sword, and Juneau beaches. Total Allied casualties for that day alone estimated at over 10,000. U.S. casualties were 1,465 killed, 3,184 wounded, 1,928 missing, and 26 captured. Many, many, many soldiers who were merely wounded wound up drowning as the high tide came in at Normandy. But it was the beginning of the end of the nightmare that was the Third Reich. And for those of us who are liberal, those of us who are progressive, those of us who do in fact love our nation, it is well that we should remember those sacrifices. It is very well. For we are assailed at this point in time by a regime that is bent on the destruction of our country. And if we do not strive every day to end it, to peacefully and lawfully remove this criminal regime from power, then we run the risk of saying to all those who sacrificed on this day 62 years ago that it was, in fact, a waste. And that's hard to say, but it is very sad, and it is very true. Never forget. Never forget. Because it was liberal principles and it was progressive principles that led us to fight fascism. If you read your history, you will know that all the way through the Second World War, there were Republicans, there were Republicans standing up in the House of Representatives, in the Senate, questioning Franklin Delano Roosevelt for his dedication to fighting fascism. Of course, these were the same Republicans who had stood up in the House and the Senate, many of them a scant few years before, to condemn and cry havoc at the thought of a Social Security safety net for all Americans. It is worth remembering. It is worth the effort. It is worth the heart. Because so much has changed. This is a sadder nation. This is a less great nation. This is a nation in need of leadership. And in need of a memory. I've said before that it's so easy for us to lose ourselves in the moment and to forget what has been done before. There are entire generations that the Republican Party has to wait for them to die away before they can try their criminal garbage again. This is the time for remembering. This is June 6th, 2006. And never mind all the religion industry hoopla, this is a day of remembrance, of heroism, the likes of which may never ever be seen in the United States or the Western world ever again. So that's where we stand. Now, beyond that, you know, dear leader, I mean, there's plenty to talk about. Dear leader went down to Laredo, Texas to talk to the Border Patrol again today. Somebody's going to tell him about the telephone. You know, I'm still waiting for him to go to Roswell. Did he go to Roswell, New Mexico, and talk about aliens? I'm not sure. But there's that. There's a new commercial running across the country that we need to talk about. It's a hateful thing. It's a nasty thing called What Do You Love About Your Union? Nasty, nasty stuff. And about 8:30 this evening, we hope to be joined by a very special guest, Greg LeRoy. 8:30 Eastern Time, mind you. 8:30 this evening, we'll be joined by Greg LeRoy, author of The Great American Job Scam and the moving force behind www.goodjobsfirst.org, an organization dedicated to helping grassroots efforts to stop the economic, you know, the taxpayer money giveaway. You know, well, you know, there's one going on down here, as a matter of fact. I think they may even be voting on it as I speak. In the city council chambers of Florence, Alabama, at Veterans Park. Dig this. Dig this. See how it all comes around? At Veterans Park in Florence, Alabama, well, there's a proposal on the table to give away Florence taxpayer dollars to Bass Pro Shop for economic development so they can put a Bass Pro Shop in and engage in some really dirty, stinking, rotten, crass commercialism at a place that is dedicated to the sacrifices made by our veterans. And they're gonna engage in that consideration on the 62nd anniversary of D-Day. Dig? Yeah. So if you want to get involved with the program, I certainly encourage you to. This is, after all, conversation radio. What you bring to the table is as or more important than anything else. And if you want to do so, the number is 877-443-2366. See, there's only two sixes in our number. 877, the number four, head on. Email comes to bob@headonradio.com. Learn it, know it, use it. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Telephone ring, somebody said, baby, what you doing? I've been wondering where you've been, now and then. I think about you and me. No use fighting about things we can't recall, 'cause it don't matter now at all. Just come on home, and baby, we'll laugh and sing, and we'll make love and let the telephone ring.
Another day is over, another light is breaking, and I'm tired, but I'm wild about you, my little one. I feel you in the water, I feel you in the corner of myself, babe. Who else, babe, knows you like I do? As we go again round the stars, friends, me.
Now is the time to join together to protect our world, or we could lose all it gives us. To learn how you can help, call for your free World Wildlife Fund Action Kit at 1-800-CALLWWF. Together, we can be a force for nature.
Nickelodeon asks kids to talk to their parents about,
you know,
no way,
boy and girl stuff.
A girl in my school, in elementary school, had told me about it, but she told me the wrong thing. She told me something totally wrong. And when I asked my mom, I didn't know how she was going to react to the question. But then I figured it'd be better to ask her and get the right information. So I went out and I got my books and I brought pictures and I explained, this is what really happened. I was shocked when my mom told me the truth, which was totally different from what she said. So that's how I kind of handled it. I realized that she was a little bit uncomfortable. Her top lip gets really skinny. It's like this.
Sometimes I can feel my lip getting skinny because she's brought it to my attention before I didn't realize, and now I can feel it happening, and I'm kind of afraid.
But it doesn't work.
Talk together.
A part of the big help.
For more information, go to nick.com.
Help me a lot.
What do nurses, teachers, and moms all have in common?
We help kids grow, learn,
and thrive.
And they are all being targeted by Governor Schwarzenegger in this year's budget. Governor Schwarzenegger used to be known as an action hero. But what kind of hero targets moms and families to bear the brunt of budget cuts? In fact, the governor is choosing corporations over California's hardworking mothers. 70% of California's corporations pay no taxes at all, while the single biggest budget cut this year is to programs that benefit hardworking moms and their families, like child care, CalWORKs, and Medi-Cal. Governor Schwarzenegger, did you know that 92% of nurses and 76% of teachers are women? Stop targeting California's moms and kids. For more information, please call the California Partnership at 562-862-2070. Brought to you by the California Partnership, on the web at california-partnership.org.
I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On for a Tuesday evening. As noted, the 6th of June. And, you know, there was no follow-up below the fold story in the Tricycle Daily down here today, following up on their query yesterday as to whether or not this was the Day of the Beast. I'm going to miss that newspaper. Lordy, I'm going to miss that newspaper. The business that I mentioned about the Bass Pro Shop, you know, that's not just here. That's not just some stupid little something that happens here in the last little toe hills of the Appalachians in northwest Alabama. It's all over the country. And if you go to whiterosesociety.org, you know, the homepage of our streaming services. And there are links there to various and sundry booksellers. Choose one. Go and search for the Great American Jobs Scam. This is an eye-opening book, and it's very, very, very readable, very enjoyable. You'll race right through it, and when you get done, you'll be, I don't know, sort of pacing around in the living room going, you know, find me an economic developer. Go ahead. And what you find out, like I said, it happens all over the country. We talked about the Kuno decision, Kuno versus Daimler Chrysler, about 3 weeks back, where the Supreme Court of the United States, in a 9-0 ruling, doesn't mean you have any say in how the tax monies are spent. Literally, and they took a case where taxpayers sued because they were municipal taxpayers on a municipal tax giveaway, and Daimler Chrysler used a legal maneuver to move it into federal court. And then once they were in federal court, the Supreme Court said, well, you have no business in federal court. Get out of here. To people who didn't want to be in federal court in the first place. That's what you're dealing with this, with this crowd in the Supreme Court in Washington. But it's, you know, again, it's not just Daimler Chrysler. It's not just Bass Pro Shop. We've got a boondoggle in northern West Virginia in Wheeling where oodles of taxpayer monies were given away in order to facilitate the construction of a, wait for it, Cabela's. You know, the happy hunting grounds. That's right. It's a retail mecca full of stuffed bears and mounted fish on the wall, and they got a big aquarium. It sits hard by the highway somewhere, and it's supposed to be a tourist attraction. That's what. Oh, lots of people come to this. And then the next line was, well, you know, we'll have significant economic development. We'll have really, really respectable businesses coming into the business park there where the Cabela's is because they'll want to be a Walmart. We got Walmart. You get a Walmart. And then of course, you know, Walmart itself is a part of the economic development scam. I've mentioned time and time again the little spot about, 8-10 miles from our remote, undisclosed, secure location where the studios are, about 10 miles away, where Walmart and Lowe's now happily sits on top of the bones of dead Confederate veterans, Civil War veterans. There's bloodshed there, serious bloodshed. They invented indirect firing with artillery there. Made a mess. And an economic development outfit called Paramount Development out of North Carolina, who won't hire West Virginians, really, came in and built this Lowe's and built this Walmart on top of the dead and said, see, we've engaged in economic development. Now, meanwhile, 2 miles down the road, they're going to shut down the Walmart that's over there to move over to the great big super Walmart. You know, it's no different than shoveling sand piles. You know, sand piles here, you move it to 10 feet away, and you need the same sand pile. So we're going to talk about a lot of those things come around about the halfway mark in tonight's program when we hear from Greg LeRoy. The Great American Jobs Scam. And if you want to read the book and you're kind enough to go and go through the portal at whiterosesociety.org, a small portion of the purchase will go to support the growth and continuation and nay, perhaps even expansion of conversation radio on the internets. So go and have a look. Greg LeRoy, The Great American Jobs Scam. Because all, you know, he didn't mean to, but when Dear Leader was spouting all that stuff in 2000, hey, we need a tax cut. It's your money. It's your money. Got to cut your taxes because it's your money. It is our money. And I don't know about you, but probably you're like me and you don't like to see our money go to support somebody. You know, yeah, we're creating good jobs that pay $5.15 an hour. No. You know, those good jobs where you have to work off the clock to keep your job, you know, give away free time, you know, that those kind of good jobs. Good jobs where they build stores on top of war graves. Good jobs where they build Bass Pro Shops in parks that are dedicated to veterans of all wars. All over this country. Yeah, those kind of good jobs. And if you're interested in fighting this kind of thing, this is a handbook for how-to. Because it'll give you the facts, the figures, it'll give you everything you need to go out and mount or become part of a fight again. Because this is not, it's not good. You know, Bass Pro Shops comes in Billy Bob's Bait and Barbecue goes out of business. That's not growth. That's not development. That's not adding to the tax base. And that's not being a good neighbor. At least that's the way I see it. So be here about another hour from now when we're joined by Greg LeRoy. We'll take a break real quick and come back with your phone calls. 877, the number 4. Head on 877-443-2366. And somebody remind me, I want to tell you about a couple of little movies you can go out and look at, you know, for free on the internets. Some stuff that's near and dear to my heart. Fire up the phones. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The Delphi bankruptcy case resumes today with the union presenting their side. Both the union and the auto parts maker have expressed that there is still a possibility an agreement can be reached by the start of the United Auto Workers annual convention in Detroit on June 11th. The current proposal has Delphi cutting wages from $27 per hour to $16.50 per hour. In order for that plan to go through, General Motors would be required to contribute. Without a GM contribution, Delphi is only willing to pay $12.50 an hour. Delphi is seeking to throw out current contracts, while the UAW membership has authorized leadership to call a strike if needed.
In Baltimore, baseball season means a summer of justice campaign on behalf of low-wage stadium cleaners against baseball billionaire Peter Angelos, owner of the Baltimore Orioles. The United Workers Association is gearing up now for a June 24th March Against Poverty. Angelos promised in 2004 to pay these workers a living wage, but has yet to keep his word. Veronica Wheeler is a young activist with the United Workers Association.
We organize day labor for our sports arena at Camden Yards, and it's like pulling all poor people together to help poor people. We're trying to solve the problem about workers working underwage, low wage salaries, and we're trying to, like, you know, better the working conditions and, you know, so that people can live more substantially.
On June 23rd, the United Workers Association is holding an all-night vigil, and then will march to Baltimore's Camden Yards on the 24th. Wheeler says it's important that day laborers who do the stadium cleaning for the Orioles get the support of the community in their quest for a living wage.
Amtrak signal workers are accusing the railroad of pulling the brake on negotiations. The Brotherhood of Railroad Signalmen says Amtrak refuses to bargain in good faith and has been purposely stalling negotiations. The signalmen have not received a wage increase in 7 years. The union says that Amtrak only wishes to pay signalmen overtime if they work more than 40 hours in a week, instead of if they work more than 8 hours in a day. And now here's Greg Gordon with the WIN Sports Report.
The Association of Minor League Umpires settled their season-long strike Tuesday and ratified a 6-year collective bargaining agreement. In a deal with the Professional Baseball Umpires Corporation, the umpires get a $100 a month salary raise and an increase in per diem of $3 a day. The new contract also guarantees the umpires that the days missed during the strike will count towards service time. Minor league teams have been using college and non-union umpires as replacements. The umpires have been on the picket line since April 6th and will return to work by June 12th.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I don't know about where you are, but it is a lovely, lovely late afternoon, early evening here in the last little toe hills of the Appalachians. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is our Tuesday night edition, and let's go straight to the phones. I hate to keep people waiting. Luke is joining us from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling.
Good evening, Bob. I tell you,
how are you?
Oh, doing well. Like I say, about the same kind of weather down here right now. It's holding nice. It's spooky. It's, you know, just wait for the shoe to drop. You know?
Yeah.
But,
well, in that neck of the woods, you do.
I know. Now, this whole thing on the marriage thing, I was just sitting doodling today, and I figured out three rules that if they really want to save marriage, there's three rules they could pass that would save marriage right away.
All right.
First one is you can't get married until you're 25. Change the age, because I see too many kids when I was in high school that when they turned 18 thought, oh, man, we got to go get married. And they went, why? But mom and dad are married, you know. That was pretty much the whole reason.
Yeah, so much for role models.
I know. But, okay, do that one first. Okay, the second rule is, okay, we're going to make adultery a 20 to life crime. If you're caught, 20 to life. You want me? Okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I kind of mentioned that the other night, Luke. And this is one of those places where I think Democrats need to learn to fight fire with fire. You know, these guys want to introduce a constitutional amendment.
Turn around.
Introduce a constitutional amendment banning divorce.
Mm-hmm. Well, no. Here's what you do on that. That's the third one. Okay, you know, they got no-fault divorce. Okay, now
yeah.
We're going to have all-fault divorce. Okay, if you decide to get divorced, fine. We're going to give you the clothes on your back, 2-3 changes, $1,000 for you and your wife. I don't care who files the divorce. Everything else, we're selling off and putting in a trust for your kids, and you all can go start again. It's like, you all are going to work it out, or you all going to go start from scratch.
I think you'd be defending some marriage there, Luke.
I mean, let's put it this way. Well, at least we won't have too many divorces.
Yeah, and I understand a lot of this is strictly tongue-in-cheek, but you know, it's...
But, I mean, you know, I mean, it's one of these things. If you're really wanting to say you're out to defend marriage, well, fine, defend marriage. That's fine. But saying that two men or two women can't get married, that ain't defending marriage. That's saying, hey,
no.
We like bigotry. We're going to say these people can't get married.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's bring back the miscegenation laws while we're at it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that's somewhere down the line. You know, I'm sure some of the real right-wingers are going, yeah, we can do that next year. You know,
no, I'm sure our good buddy Beauregard T. Clampett would be all in favor of it.
Oh, okay. A couple other quick things. First of all,
sure.
Tom Hartman was on today. I was listening to him at work, and he was bringing up the fact that, you know, they were doing all this stuff today on the 666. And
yeah.
They were explaining how, you know, with a star, if it's the one on the five-sided star, five-point star,
mm-hmm.
1 point up, 2 points down, that's the good sign. And if it's 2 points up, one down, that's the bad sign. Guess which one's on the GOP website?
I know. It's a bit, yeah, and I'm sure that those of our friends who are associated with Wicca and other like organizations are less than happy that their symbol has been appropriated by the GOP.
But I mean, but no, that's what I'm saying. Though they've got the reverse symbol. They've got the evil symbol on the GOP website.
Yeah,
and where everybody else, like if you go to the U.S. sites and all that, they're having the right side. You know, the good version.
Yeah, are we talking about GOP.org or?
Yeah, if you go to it or you go to the Spanish version, that's where he was showing Heidi that works with him. You know, there on his morning show was showing her that said that you can't see it too well on the GOP site, but if you go to their Spanish site, apparently they've got a pull-up of it, and that's the symbols that are on it. Instead of being the good sign, it's the evil one.
Oh my God! I'm trying to find the.
I understand.
Oh, there it is. GOP.com en español.
Mm-hmm. Down towards the bottom, he said.
Well, I'm looking. I don't see it. Well,
okay.
But
they may.
We'll probably find it.
Somebody may have.
Well, yeah, they may have been caught, and yeah.
Okay, and one more thing. I'll get out of here because you have other people on. I told this to Agnes, and she liked it. I said I was listening to Randy Rhoads this afternoon. Randy had a line that I just thought, you'll enjoy this. Is the fact that President Bush is kissing all this conservative ass, is this considered gay sex?
I think you could make that argument, Luke, without a doubt. You certainly could.
It's like I say, this is fun sitting watching him. He's like a pinata twisting in the wind. It just depends which way he wants to go next.
Well, you know, and I was driving around today, and I got I tuned into our one of, you know, fast becoming one of my favorite right wing freaks, Glenn Beck.
Oh, God.
And when Glenn Beck is out there, openly, you know, calling George Bush a doofus, the wheels are off the tricycle at that point.
But one thing about talking about Glenn Beck, if you go back and look, and I don't know if you want to or anyway, but since he has been on the air. CNN's wonderful media reporter, Mr. Kurtz, has not done one story on him, even though the first night he propositioned one of the other hosts.
Oh no, I'm sure it's strictly hands off Glenn Beck at this point.
You know, I mean, if you watch the first night, they had the thing. I think it's still over at Crooks and Liars. You know, if you go back a couple of weeks, they had the scene where, I mean, essentially he was propositioning Erica Hill, I think, or Hill. Hill's her last name. I can't remember the first name for sure. But like I say, he essentially was propositioning her on the air.
Oh yeah, this is going to go over well. You know, I caught him babbling about it a little bit today. Said, yeah, I don't like TV. TV is sleazy. You know, how can he tell?
You'll say he just fits right in. Just paint him over. You won't notice the difference. I mean, gosh. You know,
exactly.
It's one of those things. It's like most times you watch Wolf anymore. It's like, say, only time I watch The Situation Room anymore is just to watch that last 10 minutes of the hour to watch Jack Cafferty.
Right, who was, who today, for some reason or another, decided to use the opportunity to attack Patrick Kennedy.
I saw that on the website, and I went, why? I mean, you know, if that's fine, where was it when Rush came out of rehab after a week swearing I'm cured?
Bingo.
You know, I mean, Patrick Kennedy at least stayed for the full month, you know, which is like, I think that's what it is, the 28 days or whatever, you know, the thing is when you check in. Rush didn't stay a full week. So.
Well, you know, but to, and you know, if Patrick Kennedy said what they said he said, which I saw, you know, I hear this stuff, and that's how cynical I've become, Luke. Apparently, Patrick Kennedy said that he wanted to be treated like a black citizen of D.C., which I find just incredible. There's got to be some twisting, some spinning going on there.
I'm betting it's probably part of a longer line, and amazingly enough, quite a few words were cut out of it, if that's the case.
Well, that's my feeling, too.
It's probably the long sentence, and they probably cut out, we'll take this word and this word and this word. We'll use them.
So that was Jack Cafferty's question of the afternoon today, and I just found it in incredibly poor taste because, as you noted, Jack, you know, I don't know if he was doing anything. Yeah, I guess he was on the morning show when Flush was more or less busted. But no, nothing like that for him. You know, he's an untouchable. He's one of them. He's one of the multimillionaires. You know, he's not a politician, so he's not fair game. And of course, it all goes hand in hand, I think, Luke, with the idea that, you know, this is a Democratic scandal.
Well, I did hear one thing today they were talking about, and I agree with it. Every time we refer to this from now on, it is no longer the estate tax. It is the Paris Hilton tax. You know, like I say, if they rename things, where it's our turn. You know, it is now the Paris Hilton tax. Let's see them pass that.
Well, and that, you know, that's we've got flag burning, we've got gay marriage, and we've got the Paris Hilton tax. That's this week's Senate agenda.
No, that's for the next, like, see, because the gay marriage is like this full week.
Right.
Then I assume flag burning will be most of next week. Then a week after that, we're going to be into the estate the Paris Hilton tax, excuse me. And like I say, that's 3 weeks. They've only got like 8 or 9 weeks left in session. So think of it. That's a third of it's going to be eaten up right there. And I don't even know if they've gotten their, you know, the mandatory bills they have to pass. You know, all the 13 department bills, you know, that they are legally required they have to pass. You know, the one to run all of run the government.
But you know, they'll do, I forget what's the name of that bill, a continuing resolution, that's it.
Yeah, but the thing is they're only in session for 45 more days.
Well, you know, that's then they may not get to the estate tax. I mean that may all be taken up in gay marriage and flag burning.
Like I say, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, as it gets further and further along, how much the people are going to start, you know, pounding on the doors going, you know, guys, we'd really like to talk about things like the war. We'd like to talk about Medicare.
We'd like to talk about Haditha. Let's get this out of the way. Sure. Any number of things. I had a blog entry from the Frame Shop talking about the Republican Party wants to be wedding planners. And then suggesting a list of the top 10 other things to worry about besides that.
Well,
but what they don't, you know, their silence is deafening, Luke.
Well, you know, it's like we. I'll give him credit. I saw this weekend that my red light Democrat showed up on Meet the Press. You know, the red light comes on, Joe Biden appears. But at least he was doing something. I'll give him credit for it. It's like I say, when Russia went after him on some of this, he just went down the list. You know, Katrina. You know. Iraq, you know, just every time anybody asks any questions about anything like that, about gay marriage or flag burning, that's the first thing the Democrat ought to answer is they ought to just list those top 12 or 13 things. You know, why aren't we talking about this first? You know, just start
right,
Iraq, Katrina, you know, Medicare, schools, all the way down the line.
Well, it's the Luke, you and I both know it's the 20% solution.
Yeah.
There has been a determination made by GOP pollsters that there is 20% of the American population that can be moved by allegations that America will come crumbling down around our ankles if we, you know, let people who want to pick out China patterns, if we don't put big rocks in public buildings, and if we don't make sure that America is safe for the gun manufacturers.
Oh, I meant to ask, have you heard any reports on what's going on in the governor's race down in Alabama?
I haven't seen any returns yet. Frankly, we don't expect any because the polls aren't even closed yet.
Oh, okay. Well, but that ought to be good.
But I did notice that when my father went to vote today, they made him show ID.
Okay.
So I guess that one of those things has been passed here, too.
Well, be happy you didn't have to pee in the cup. I mean, gosh.
Well, that's next. You know, after that, you know, it's maybe biometrics or something. You know, anything to keep, you know, I mean... He's an older American, Luke. You know, what if he didn't drive anymore? What if he didn't maintain a driver's license? How's he going to vote?
Isn't it amazing, though, how if 10 years ago you said we're going to pass out ID cards, the Republicans would have been screaming, you're trying to catalog us, you're trying to find out who's got guns, you know.
Yeah.
Now they're wanting to make sure everybody in the country's carrying one before they're done.
Exactly. Hey, Luke, have yourself a great evening. Thanks for all the fine talking points. I appreciate it.
Have a good
later now. Go and try. Bye. Yeah, and you know, I'm not trying to raise a stink. I'm not trying to be cranky. But what do you do about 85, you know, because older Americans are the ones who vote. During the time we were at the polls, I did not see a single human being younger than, 40. Not one. And that's distressing. But what do you do about somebody who doesn't have a driver's license and you come in, you go in there to vote and they demand a photo ID? Do they just get turned away? I mean, frankly, it pissed me off a little bit because, you know, dad's a little less than steady on his feet. And he has to stand there in front of the table and go fishing around for his wallet and drag out his ID. I'm sorry, you'll have to take that out of the wallet. Tell me that that is not designed to keep people away from the polls. Tell me that there is not a wholesale move on in this country to stop people from exercising the... driver's license. What do you do? Do you tell the 90-year-old person who has never driven a day in her life because the husband did all the driving? Do you tell her that she cannot vote? And why is it this seems to be happening in the Georgias and the Alabamas and the Mississippis? Why is it happening here? I mean, there's some dot connecting, there's some triangulating you can do here, there's some simple math. There is a segment of the population that, you know, Mississippi run by Republicans, Alabama run by Republicans, Georgia run by Republicans. Why do Republicans fear voters? I'll tell you why. It goes back to that 20% solution. If you can motivate that 20% and get them to the polls and keep as many of the others, the undesirables, the people who might not vote with your silly agenda, from voting, then you've got a much better chance of achieving the total control and dominance that they seek. And it's not a pretty America they want to build. Let's take a break. I'm Bob Kincaid. 877-433-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network.
The heart is a blue. Up through the stony ground, there's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck, and you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend to
take you out of this place. Someone you can lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful day.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss and tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Wad Wally and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to. A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a... Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Welcome back to Head On for a Tuesday night. I'm Bob Kincaid. And just to continue for a moment on the voting thing, I noticed over at the website of our good friend Brad Friedman at bradblog.com, he noted the fact that, I believe it was a CNN person. I could be wrong. Just a second. There it is. Yeah, it was Lou Dobbs. Yeah. Lou Dobbs said voting machines are a threat to democracy. We're not particularly surprised by that. Had an election integrity advocate on the show on Lou Dobbs's We Hate Immigrants line. But he's right about that. It is a threat to democracy. Now, meanwhile... this was kind of a new thing for me today as I walked with Dad into the polling place. The polling place that he used for something on the order of that 40 years. Well, no, you can't use that one anymore. And we had to go an extra mile up the road to a church to vote instead of the little elementary school where I went that's three blocks up the road. Yeah, well, you know, you've got to gerrymander these things. But anyway, it goes in, and I suppose those are optical scan machines. It's a great big sort of heavyweight paper ballot, and when you're done, you slide it into something that looks remarkably like a shredder. And the number goes up one. Like, you know, it said 106, and we slid Dad's ballot in, and it said 107. And the little paper trail coming out of the top didn't move. And there was no receipt, and there was no accounting to the voter. Just got to take it on faith in Alabama that your vote actually got counted, and had to show ID. Now, for those who say, "Well, you know, Bob, what's the matter with that? You can show ID. That ain't no big deal. Everybody's got a driver's license." No, everyone doesn't, for starters. And to back up just a minute, when you go and you register to vote, you know, you go down to the courthouse, for instance. You get approved residency. There's where you show your ID. Not on the day you vote. So is there any doubt in anyone's mind? Is there any doubt whatsoever in anyone's mind that in all of these Republican-dominated states that are suddenly having photo ID frenzies for voters, that there is an insidious purpose behind it? I mean, after all, Muffy and Ted, with the $1.5 million a year trust fund income, They're not gonna have a problem showing a license or a photo ID. There's only a certain class of people that might want to vote and might not have a driver's license. Primarily, that is the elderly and the extremely poor. And of course, if you go back to the origins of this nation, you'll find that the origins of the franchise, voting rights, were afforded only to property owners. This and all of that came. A lot of that was driven by who? Yeah, the Southern colonies, where it was decided on a compromise, and I forget, maybe I got my math wrong, but a slave was three-fifths or four-fifths of a human being for purposes of apportioning representation in the House of Representatives, because the Senate was the bastion of Southern power, because you know, everybody just got two. But when it came to voting, only property owners. Now, if you don't have a car and therefore don't need a driver's license, odds are you don't own property either. So isn't this just regression? Isn't this just a matter of backing up into a hated, dark, dreary, miserable, racist past? Isn't this nothing short of an overt attempt to overturn the Voting Rights Act of 1964? And if it's not, what the hell is it then? It seems pretty obvious to me. We're on top of the hour. It's time for the news. And when we come back, your phone calls are always welcome. 877, the number 4, head on 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. A package of incentives that represents a major initiative by world powers to persuade Iran to curb its nuclear program contains, quote, positive steps, end quote, but also, quote, ambiguities, end quote, the country's top nuclear negotiator said Tuesday, speaking on state television after receiving the proposals from EU foreign policy chief Javier Solana. Ali Larijani called the talks with Solana constructive and said Iran would respond after studying the incentives. The United States, along with four other veto-wielding members of the UN Security Council, Britain, France, Russia, and China, drew up the package with Germany in a meeting in Vienna on Friday. Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman John Warner is frustrated with the Bush administration over how his committee learned about the Haditha inquest, and he's demanding answers about why it took 2 months for the White House to tell the committee what it knew about the killing of 24 Iraqi civilians by U.S. Marines. The Virginia Republican has pledged to hold open hearings on the military's conduct after Congress reconvenes. Warner and members of the Armed Services Committee were not made aware of the Haditha investigation until May 18th, 2 months after the White House found out about the killings in March, according to a Warner aide. A coalition of veterans groups charged in a lawsuit Tuesday that their privacy rights were violated after thieves stole personal data on 26.5 million military personnel from a Veterans Affairs employee. The class action lawsuit against the federal government filed in U.S. District Court in Washington is the second suit since the VA disclosed the May 3rd burglary 2 weeks ago. It demands that the VA fully disclose which military personnel are affected by the data theft and seeks $1,000 in damages to each person, up to $26.5 billion total. The veterans are also asking for a court order barring VA employees from using sensitive data until independent experts determine proper safeguards. Billy Preston, the exuberant keyboardist who landed dream gigs with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and enjoyed his own series of hit singles, including Outta Space and Nothing from Nothing, died today. Preston's longtime manager, Joyce Moore, said Preston had been in a coma since November in a care facility and was taken to a Scottsdale, Arizona hospital Saturday after his condition deteriorated. Billy Preston was 59. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Hey everyone, it's Dar Williams. I just signed on to a new program called Empower. If you think you or a friend might have a mental health problem, call 1-800-969-6642 or visit empoweryouth.org.
American and British veterans marked the 62nd anniversary of the D-Day landings today with ceremonies and talks to school children about the invasion that changed the course of World War II. Hundreds of relatives and others joined at least two dozen veterans to remember the June 6, 1944 invasion on Normandy's beaches that helped free France and much of Europe from Nazi Germany's grip. Former Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge laid a wreath along with the U.S. Ambassador to France at the American Cemetery in Colliery-sur-Mer, where thousands of crosses and Stars of David mark soldiers' graves on a finely groomed lawn. Police found 9 severed heads today in fruit boxes near a volatile city northeast of Baghdad, authorities said, the second such discovery in less than a week. A roadside bomb also exploded near an American military convoy in central Baghdad, killing a woman and wounding 3 pedestrians. The 3-vehicle convoy was traveling near one of Baghdad's bus stations when the bomb detonated. The convoy kept moving. The boxes containing the heads, all from men, were discovered by a highway in the village of Hadid near Bakuba, a mixed Shiite-Sunni Arab city 35 miles northeast of Baghdad, that has seen a recent rise in sectarian violence. The Federal Bureau of Investigation has refused to turn over 89% of Vice President Dick Cheney's FBI records in response to a request for the records under the Freedom of Information Act. In all, the Bureau has released 112 of 1,061 pages reviewed during a 2-year investigation following a request by San Francisco blogger Michael Petrelis. Petrelis filed the request prior to the 2004 election. Portions of nearly all the pages released have been redacted. There's a time and a place for everything, local Australian governments have ruled as they move to stop brothels opening near cemeteries. Local governments in the northern state of Queensland have called on state authorities to establish an exclusion zone banning brothels opening within 220 yards of cemeteries. It follows a decision by a council in Ipswich, just outside the Queensland capital of Brisbane, to reject a proposal for a brothel to be built across the road from the local cemetery. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, you are. I'm Bob, and, well, you know, for a Tuesday night, I think we've gotten off to a nice start. Yeah, I was just thinking about the fact that the polling place was up at a local establishment, my father's polling place, and the local establishment of the Church of Christ. And I'm not talking about the nice Church of Christ, the United Churches of Christ. No. No, I'm talking about the people that leave pianos out in the rain because somewhere in Psalms it says to sing and make melody in thy heart. And the reason I didn't see very many people there, there could be a wall of holiness around there that are keeping, heathen Southern Baptists out. That's how bad it is down here. Ow! Let's go to the phones right away. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Bob.
Welcome
how
to the show.
Doing?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
I just woke up, and every time I do that, it's like hatching out of an egg, you know? Like Rob,
I know the
thing. Reborn to create the world in Egyptian mythology. Listen, a note from your newscast. What is this about? I hate that word brothel. I think bordello is much more classier.
I like bordello too. It sounds Italian.
Well, whatever. But anyway, they don't want them near a cemetery.
Right.
Are they afraid somebody's going to try to slip in there and get a cold one?
Oh man, you were working on that one, weren't you?
No.
Very well done.
That just springs naturally from my head the way Athena did from Zeus.
Oh, that's really.
Huh?
That's beautiful.
But I mean, I can see where they won't have bookstores near churches and other things like that, but good Lord, I mean, I don't think the residents of the cemetery are going to mind what is going on across the street. Do you?
Well, no, but it's the same. It's the same. Anytime a politician is at a loss, and it doesn't matter whether it's here or Australia or anywhere else in the so-called civilized world, anytime a politician is at a loss, he knows he can always go home and say, "I was tough on crime," or "I was tough on sex," and somehow or another wrangle another vote or two out of it.
Well, I guess you're right too. They certainly get their kicks out of this business with his sex thing, that's for damn sure. You know, I was surprised to hear about your father having so much trouble. I mean, I don't show any, I don't even go anywhere to vote because I vote absentee.
Mm-hmm.
And I just call the people up and they send me a form to fill out and I fill it out and no IDs required, nothing like that. Of course, I've been on the register and I voted ever since I've been here. So, I mean, they know who.
Well, see, I've never, you know, when I vote in West Virginia, Jim, there's no issue. Nobody's ever asked me for a driver's license. That's because they haven't. We're not held in the thrall of right wing Republicans. This is a very, very localized Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, things like that, where these moves are underway, and they're designed strictly and specifically to keep people out of the polling places.
Well, you know, that's regrettable. That's all I can say. And I guess it's an indication of the times in which we live, that's for sure.
I mean, honest to Pete, I don't think my dad's missed an election since Eisenhower was president down here.
Well, like I say, I'm from South Carolina. I don't make any boast about it, but I mean, you know, after all, it was the first station to lead the rest of the country in the war against the rest of the country. So, but I can remember when they used to have what they call the poll tax and stuff like that, you know.
Sure.
And,
literacy tests.
Yeah, I remember there was the one that used to talk about they would give black people a copy of the Hong Kong Times and ask them to read that. And then they'd ask him to write his name, and they'd give him a ballpoint pen and a sheet of wax paper. And the upshot was the fellow would say, I can see it. Ain't no N-word to go vote here today.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the way it was, probably, I guess. It was just...
Well, that's the purpose of this as well. If you're not landed, you know, if you're not a property owner, if you're not of a certain economic level, the Republicans that now run this state don't want to run the risk of you voting. And it's the same way in Mississippi, Georgia. I think the Carolinas have entertained the notions of these, and Ohio, of course. Oddly enough, I keep mentioning southern states. The single meanest, most voter unfriendly place on planet Earth is either Ohio or Florida.
Really?
Yeah. In the 2004 election, for instance, and a lot of this came out in Robert F. Kennedy's Jr.'s article, and it's been verified time and time again. Let's say you vote up at the Little Brick Schoolhouse two blocks up on Euclid Avenue or something.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's the polling place for precinct 119, but it may also be the polling place for precinct 123. And precincts 119 and 123 are both in the same room, and the machines aren't designated. And so you go vote, you vote in 119, but you vote on the 123 machine, and your vote is automatically invalidated. Instantaneously.
Can't they put a number on the machine and tell them which is which?
No.
And they don't have anybody to tell you that... Oh, God. Well...
I mean, this is the kind of stuff that leads... Have you read the article yet, Jim?
No, I haven't. It's in
Rolling Stone. It's available online now. Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s article, was the 2004 election stolen? In the camp of yes, it was. It's a day late and a dollar short, but I'm glad people are beginning to notice.
Well, yeah, it was stolen, as a matter of fact. And I certainly hope that by the time the next one rolls around, people will begin to realize exactly what's going on. I don't think a lot of these ploys that they're pulling, like this gay marriage stuff and all this other crap that they use to divert people's attention, I don't think it's working the way it used to. You know, you can only use one little set of tricks so long before you better have a new set in the wings. And I don't think that this stuff is working too well. I really don't.
Well, the sad thing is it worked well enough in 2000 and 2004. You know, Florida was the designated spot in 2000, and we got you can go to gregpalast.com. Greg Palast released his new book today, Armed Madhouse. Mm-hmm. And he's the one who broke all of this information through. Choice Point, which later became infamous for its association with the Department of Defense. Choice Point was the group that put together the voter purge list that purged hundreds of thousands of poor and African-American, mainly, voters in Florida to keep them from voting for Al Gore.
Saying that these people had a police record or were felons.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And who weren't. You know, it was a simple computer name match. If a guy named John Smith, who had a felony in Texas, if there was another guy named John Smith in Florida, they purged John Smith in Florida for being John Smith in Texas.
Well, all I can say is this. If you get into power that way and you become president like using methods like that, you will have no victory. You'll have nothing but the taste of dust and ashes in your mouth, that's for sure. The trouble is, I'm tired of having to eat some of the same stuff. Let him eat by himself. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, Jim, and I think that...
I won't say it on this program.
Yeah, but a majority of America has gotten that way, too. But they don't care. I mean, we're talking about a cancerous little knot of 20% of the American electorate, maybe, and their corporatist allies. And they don't care what happens to the rest of us. They just don't care.
Well, maybe one day the times will come when we won't care about them. You know?
Yeah.
The sun don't shine on one dog's butt all day, my friend, all the time, as the old saying goes. And they're
well, that's true, but you got to remember what Stalin said. It's not who votes, it's who counts the votes, or something like that.
Well, I'll just leave him completely out of it because I think he's such an onerous person, but all I can say is this, you know, my motto is vote and vote often.
I tend to share, I share your sense of that.
You know,
right.
And you know, and that's honest to God's truth. But anyway, I just think it's ridiculous what's happening in this country, and I don't know what's going to be the upshot of it in 2006, because they're really going to be going for every jugular they can. That is for damn sure. You can be rest assured of that.
Well, I think we have to be extra vigilant. Jim, the phone lines are piling up. Thank you so much for your many thoughts. I do appreciate it. Have a good evening.
You too.
Bye now. And rolling quickly on, we'll dodge the break this time through. Let's go to Wayne.
Hey, Bob.
Wayne, welcome. I'm doing good. You?
I'm doing great, buddy. Doing great. Listen, did you by any chance see Buzz Flash today?
No, I didn't.
Somebody's come up with a wonderful idea. And,
okay.
You know, they talked about, you know, sort of as one astute political observer noted, gay marriage doesn't pose any threat to heterosexual marriage. But hypocritical married politicians who bed young lasses or lads do. So what this guy's proposing is that George Bush propose a constitutional amendment to prohibit adultery, and goes on to say that he feels that this would do more to help the problem of marriage in this country than anything else, and says that let's say that the Senate passed the death penalty for any senator or executive branch member who support or vote for a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage and then are discovered to be adulterers. Now, I could vote for that one.
Oh yeah, I could have a lot of fun with that. I love it when other things follow this program, because it was last night that I said, you know, we need a Democrat to stand up and say, okay, let's have a constitutional amendment banning adultery.
Oh, you said that?
Yeah, last night.
Well, I didn't get to hear last night. I was at a union meeting. Well,
I understand.
You know, did you write Buzz Flash today?
No, that wasn't mine, but it's always fun to be ahead of the curve.
Political observer, would you?
I am, but that's not me.
Okay, well, I think that's a real good idea. You know, I mean, we're ruining more marriages than adultery.
Well, you know, I think back to the great Clinton hunt, Wayne. Do you remember how Henry Hyde?
Oh yeah.
And how he said, you know, this is about the rule of law. And then it turned out that, you know, 20, 25 years earlier, he had completely destroyed a marriage.
Right. Well, then, where was that? When was
Bob Barr?
We're trying to replace
Bob Barr had paid for abortions.
When did all that happen? When they kept falling one after the other, speakers. Speaker.
Yeah, well, that was after Newt Gingrich got caught.
Right. And then everybody they put up, they found out that, you know.
Yeah, they tried to put David Livingston from Louisiana up and found out that he had the same little problem that Jimmy Swaggart did.
Right, exactly. You know, what a bunch of, it's absolutely amazing.
If they weren't so evil, they'd be awfully fun to watch.
Yes, they would be. You know, maybe even humorous. But they are evil, truly evil. But I think Jim's right in a way that there ain't so many people, or there's too many people falling for all this stupid stuff, but not as many as before. And, you know, that's we need that desperately. We need that desperately.
No, I think you're right.
Friend, I didn't know that you made that comment last night.
No, I love, like I said, I love it. I do that every now and then, just a little bit ahead of the curve, and then bang, it happens, and there you go.
Well, ahead of the curve you are, my good man. Especially
hey,
when you're on the air.
Thanks. Well, yeah. I wanted to ask you a question, if I may, please, while I have you on the line.
Go for it.
Have you seen this commercial that's supposedly airing in Beckley now? What do you love about your union?
No.
This is really, really nasty. I'll email it to you. Check your email. I'm going to talk about it a little bit later in the program, but this is really disgusting stuff.
Oh, that's, I'll tell you what, that's a product of the ABC.
Center for Union Facts is what they call it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's another, I think that's a arm of the Heritage Foundation.
Maybe, but it's got lines like, a young woman cashier on video saying, you know what I love? Paying union dues just so I can keep my job.
Right, right. Yeah, I know.
You know these...
Well, your old compadre quotes those people a lot. Union.
Oh, Lion O'Brien?
Yeah, Lion O'Brien. You got it, brother. You got it. I want you to know our good friend Jethro keeps him on his toes.
Yeah, we got to, you know, we got to start a feature just so everybody all over the country who hears us talking about this guy can hear just how stupid he is.
Well, if I could stay in my office long enough, I might be able to record some of the stupid things he says and you know, send them to you. But
that's the problem though. You have to be there for the whole 2.5 hours or whatever, and sometimes it's just too much. It's more than the mind can take.
It is. And indeed, if you sit there for the 2.5 hours, he's going to say something very stupid. You know. I love Jethro. Jethro calls him up and says, okay, O'Brien, let's dance.
Click.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, see, that's the difference between that and conversation radio, Wayne.
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what. This guy doesn't want to hear anybody's opinion but his own. Of course, you know, he'll talk to you if you agree with him, you know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know. I mean, he's like, old Mega Dittos, buddy. You know. That
oh,
dude.
God. Don't do that to me. I had dinner a little bit ago,
well,
right?
I'm sorry, man, but, you know. Anyway, I'm gonna start working on this constitutional amendment on adultery. I think that has a hell of a lot better chance, and it'll do more good for America.
Absolutely, but you know, if you write that death penalty part in there, I don't think you're going to get any senators to introduce it.
Can we introduce it in the House first?
I don't think you're going to get anything out of them either, Wayne.
They know they'll be included sooner or later, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
A write-in constitutional amendment. Is that possible? I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, look that up, would you? That's the research topic.
Yes. All right, pal.
All right, man, we're all excited. We're looking forward to talking to Greg LeRoy here in a little bit.
Oh, okay. Oh, what time's it coming on?
About 8:30 or so.
Okay. Very good.
All right, we'll be talking to you.
Okay, talk to you later.
Bye now. And rolling right along. And by the way, once we get Greg on, it's my understanding he's willing to answer questions, take calls from you guys, if you're so inclined. So feel free. Especially if you've got a you know, one of these economic development boondoggle issues that maybe you'd like to learn how to fight. Let's go to Chris. Chris has been waiting. Hey, Chris, welcome to the show.
All right, now, see what you do is you got a brothel next to a graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
You come to the brothel, and then later you go at the graveyard.
And they came and went at the same time.
Huh?
They came and went at the same time.
you gotta combine them. I saw an ad today not an ad. Well, it's more an ad. Oh, I can't believe I said that. It's more of an ad than it is an article. Catherine Harris will not kowtow to the Bushes.
No, you're making that's a product of your sad, sick imagination, isn't it?
It's on the Drudge Report right now. But I've got some stuff that isn't on there, the kind of the news that you don't read about. Matt Drudge is suing Rick Santorum for child support. Santorum has also become the subject of a stalker warrant after following Al Gore around with a suitcase full of unmentionables. Dick Cheney is working on a documentary entitled A Clearly Foreseen Shot. The inconvenient truth.
Yeah.
Clearly for President Bush at this moment is raving stark mad that free trade should have been available when he owned the Texas Rangers. He is so mad about that. Rush Limbaugh has reversed his opposition to securing our nation's borders after learning he can broadcast his show from a pharmacy in Juarez, Mexico. Vicente Fox has released photos of American Minutemen crossing over to Mexico illegally to obtain visas for domestics they employ in many area hotels and slaughterhouses. This is my favorite. Clearly sweating the transition in 2008, Karen Hughes has seen in many towns in New Hampshire trying to press to flesh. But, in a related story, many citizens in New Hampshire have now begun to contact symptoms comparable to bird flu. So I don't know if there's any... it could be a tie-in. I don't know. But,
there might be something there.
I hate that one. But, Dick Cheney.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, I did see the blurb earlier today. Catherine Harris says she only followed the law in 2000.
And she drunkenly thrust her breast at the camera. Oh, God. Well, that speech that Bush gave when she was standing back there in the back trying to take the picture with her cell phone.
I forgot about that one.
That was so funny. Oh, Christ.
Like I said, if they weren't so doggone evil, they'd be a laugh riot.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I just Carrie and I just got back from voting a little while ago.
Have to show your ID?
Yeah. I had to repeat Democrat 3 times because the
huh? What? The Democrat?
The considerably aged folks at the table, which God love them, but I think one of the requirements for a pollster is hearing. Hello, Democrat. And then he goes, oh, and he has to open up this thing up and tear one off.
Well, actually, when we were there, this morning, the Democrats were outnumbering the Republicans because I think a lot of people were wanting to vote in at least inside the city limits inside the county, on the circuit clerk's race.
Yeah.
And there was nobody running in the Republican slot.
There.
And of course, this being Alabama, and this blows some people's minds, who aren't used to it. This being Alabama, if you're a Republican and you want to vote in the Democratic primary, it ain't no thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which just drives me nuts.
I voted over at Forest Hills, and I was there about 6:30 local time, and there had only been 650 ballots put in.
That's just exciting. It's the same thing we saw with our primary up in West Virginia, Chris. Can you imagine letting 22% of the people eligible to vote choose your leadership for you for the next 2, 4, 6 years? That just blows my mind. How can you be alive and let that happen?
I really don't know. The old saying goes, if you don't go vote, then you don't have anything to gripe about. That's very true. Listen, if you want to gripe about way, no matter what party you are, if you want to gripe about this, that, or the other, then go vote. If you're not going to participate in the process, shut up. I don't want to hear it.
Exactly.
You're just as bad as the ones in office that are tearing our lives apart.
So, did your daughter enjoy going with you to the polling place?
She went last time too. Of course, in November I'll have to vote absentee. But she loves it. She loves the whole process. but I'll be I won't be around in November, but my friend who got the first woman ever for the District 1 state representative, Tammy Irons, she'll be running again in November, so I got to make sure to vote for that. First woman ever in District 1 state representative. I was so proud of her. And I tried everything I could to try and get national attention to that. I emailed just about everybody that you could possibly do. And of all places, in Louisiana, they carried it in the paper. But that was it. That's all that I could find. That's a great win for the Democratic Party. It's a great win for local politics here. And why the Democratic Party doesn't promote stuff like that, I have no idea. You know, the huge stranglehold that the Republican Party has on this state, and here we've got something to promote. I just don't know. I don't have an answer for it. Bob?
Chris, I got a question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I was wondering a little bit about how the polling places are working over in your section.
Well, they're going pretty good. They had it split. You walk in and they had it split between the first of the alphabet and last alphabet. You go and they would ask you, Republican or Democrat. And the time that I was in there, about 8 or 9 different people voted, and I was the only Democrat, which doesn't really bother me right now because it's a primary. It would really bother me in November, but right now it's not that bad. They can cast all they want for Third Reich. I want to be Roy Moore right now, but I just hope they don't vote for him in November.
Okay, I had one more question. Just hold on while we go to break, okay?
Okay.
All right, thanks, Chris.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. 42 years ago today, the largest invasion force ever assembled stormed the beaches of Normandy and established a foothold in Europe that would eventually lead to the fall of the Third Reich. The Allies, led by General Eisenhower, understood what a victory meant that day. Had the Germans forced the invasion back into the sea, things would have been very different. I don't doubt that we still would have won in the end, but the war might have dragged on for many more years and cost many millions of more lives. When I was growing up, history was one of my least favorite subjects because of how badly it was taught. If you were lucky, you had one of those rare teachers who knew how to bring the past to life to make you understand how our lives are affected by past events. And if you were really lucky, you had a teacher who understood how important military battles were. No history teacher I can recall spoke much about warfare. And that's a shame because both history and culture are defined by those who win battles. Had the results been different at places like Salamis, Actium, Hastings, Agincourt, Vienna, Waterloo, Gettysburg, and of course Normandy, the world would be a very different place. And there are still battles to be fought that will determine what the world will look like to our children and grandchildren. As Lincoln reminded us, we need to remember why those men fought and died. Did they die so that we could all be free to determine our own futures, or so that a few powerful people could determine it for the rest? That's the question we face today and will continue to face until humanity becomes united or dies out completely. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show via streaming audio every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool block skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
The cold surrender in the dark is gone, down to the middle man.
Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. The Republican effort to get rid of the estate tax is back again this week, despite the fact that this tax impacts only the richest of the super rich. Little surprise, then, that the people who are leading the effort to repeal the estate tax are members of just 18 families. Among these are the Waltons, the Gallows, and the heirs to the Mars Candy Bar and to Campbell's Soup. These landed gentry have tried to confuse the public by claiming small farmers would lose their family business. But the American Farm Bureau couldn't cite a single instance of this happening. In fact, the estate tax applies to just 0.25% of all estates. You don't need to worry. If you've got $2 million or less to leave to your kids, you're doubly lucky. You've led the good life, and you can pass every dime of it on to your kids without any taxation whatsoever. The only question before Congress right now is whether there should be a ceiling at all on estates, or whether the wealthiest of the wealthy, say those who have estates of $10 million or $100 million, should be able to give it all tax-free to their kids. Leave aside for a minute that their kids already have had every advantage that money can buy. Do they really need $10 million or $100 million more that they never worked for? And what about the budget deficit? By eliminating the estate tax, the deficit would grow by $1 trillion over the next decade. For reasons of fairness and for reasons of prudence, we got to keep the estate tax. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Oh,
with us? Agnes, I cannot hear Greg if he's there.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
There you are, Greg.
Yep.
Ah, thank you. Sorry for the delay. Welcome to the program. Thank you for taking time to be with us this evening.
Thanks very much, Bob.
I had originally hoped to set this interview up a little while back when things might have been a little bit more topical, but with the Kuno decision coming out. But it seems that this issue stays topical.
It's always going to be with us. The rich and the abusive are always with us.
It's not so much the poor you have always with you anymore. It's the rich and the abusive.
Yes.
First of all, let's talk a little bit about the organization that you run, if you don't mind.
Sure. Good Jobs First.
Good Jobs First, and that's goodjobsfirst.org, is it?
It is, and first is spelled out, and Good Jobs First is all one word, .org. We're about 8 years old, and we're basically a resource center for anybody, and I really mean anybody, any community organization, any elected official, any citizen who wants to tighten up the ship when it comes to economic development. The problem is that over the years, states have enacted dozens and dozens of so-called incentive programs or economic development incentive programs, but most of them have really turned into kind of giveaways. The average state has more than 30 different ways that it subsidizes companies in the name of jobs right now.
Well, Greg, is it fair to refer to this as corporate welfare?
Some people do use that term. You hear business incentives, corporate welfare, development subsidies. I'll take all of the above.
I'm thinking, and what I'm hoping you're successful in doing is raising awareness. I know that's your that's part of your goal as well. Most people hear economic development and they think, oh boy, this is going to be great. You know, my city is, my town, my county, my state's going to prosper from this. It would seem that you have evidence to indicate the contrary.
Well, a couple things. Yeah, we argue that most of the time companies are getting paid to do what they would have done anyway, because tax breaks really don't matter very much to a company's bottom line. They don't matter very much in terms of determining whether one place is better for a company than another. In fact, they're usually completely irrelevant when a company's deciding between competing locations. But the problem is, if the company was going to come anyway and then you pay them a gazillion dollars to come, the money they're not going to pay is not going to help pay for the cost of them arriving. You know, if a company comes and creates, you know, 300 jobs in your community, you're going to get some growth. You're going to have to widen some road lanes. You're going to have to pick up trash. You're going to have to educate some kids and build some classrooms and hire some teachers. All those things cost money. And if the company that's arriving has got a 10-year property tax exemption and that corporate income tax credit, that means they're never going to pay income tax, or they're not going to pay income tax for years after they arrive, and they're not paying any sales tax on the materials they purchase to construct the facility, well, there's only two things that can happen. In terms of the costs created by that growth, either everybody else who's already there is going to get stuck with a higher tax bill to pay for that growth, or the quality of services is going to go down because there's just less money available to pay for it, or sometimes you get a little bit of both.
Well, that's sort of what we saw in Toledo with the Daimler-Chrysler giveaway, wasn't it?
Absolutely. This case, the case you referred to, the Supreme Court decision that just came down a couple weeks ago, the Kuno versus Daimler-Chrysler case. Yeah, the total package for this Jeep plant in Toledo came in at about $281 million. And that was a combination mostly of income tax breaks and property tax exemptions. And they were both the subject of this case that went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court.
And in many states, it's property taxes that drive the success of the local school boards, right?
Absolutely. Property taxes today remain the largest single source of revenue for public schools. In some states, they still comprise more than half of the pie. And therefore, when you give a big factory or a big office park or a big Walmart distribution center or whatever it is a long property tax holiday, the biggest victim of that revenue loss is your local school board.
Well, backing up just a minute, Greg, when you say that a company generally knows where it's going to go anyway.
Here's why. Okay. If you listen to the people, there is a niche in consulting out there called site location consulting. There's actually hundreds of them around the country. I spent some time in my book talking about a few of the more famous ones. But there are people out there who make their living advising companies on the most profitable place to either relocate or expand. And they work, they do thousands of deals a year. When they get their marching orders from the companies about what matters, taxes are always at the bottom of the list. And that's because the IRS tells us that all state and local taxes combined as a cost of doing business for the average company in this country total up to just 0.8% of their cost structure. So it's the other 99.2% of their cost structure, you know, labor, occupancy, energy, logistics, raw materials, electricity or whatever it is they use a lot of, you know, depending on what it is they do or make. Those are the business basics that really drive the decision. If you're talking about giving a company a tax break, you're talking about shaving some fraction of 0.8% of their cost structure off the equation. That's just nothing compared to, you know, any a tiny variation in wage levels, a tiny variation in electricity costs, you know, for a company that uses a lot of juice.
But what is nothing for the company often turns out to be a whole lot of something for the taxpayers.
Well, that's exactly right. What doesn't matter much to companies' bottom lines and to their decision-making process can mean a deal, you know, difference between a crowded classroom and a classroom size that's, you know, better for the kids, a school that's upgraded or a school that's not upgraded, a road that's made safer by widening and having a better interchange, all those things. Yeah, it really makes a big difference in terms of local public services.
Well, when companies start these kind of enter into these kinds of agreements with whether it's municipalities, counties, whatever, it strikes me that there's never really a give and take, Greg. It's you're going to have a perpetual tax holiday on your corporate income taxes, but the company is never asked in turn to promise that they're going to be there for extended periods of time. It seems like it's a situation that sets itself up for abuse.
And that's the problem. The average deal today still doesn't really have any binding language that says the company will stay for, you know, if you're getting a 10-year property tax exemption, very few deals say you must stay for the 10-year duration of that property tax exemption. Some deals do, especially big deals today, do have what we call clawbacks or money-back guarantee language, saying that if you leave within a certain period of time or if you fall short of your job creation goals, you know, after 2 or 3 years of building and hiring, then we as taxpayers get, you know, a prorated share of our money back. If you only hire 80% of your job goal, we get 20% of our money back or things like that. But you're right. The vast majority of deals do not provide taxpayers with any meaningful security that the jobs are really going to stay. And that's a huge problem. It's obviously something that your state, like any other industrial state, has experienced many, many plant closings. That's actually how I backed into this issue accidentally starting 20 years ago, working out of Chicago for people trying to save factories. Over and over and over again, we discovered, looking at these factories that were now being shut, that they had gotten, you know, tax-free loans, property tax abatements, training grants, enterprise zone credits. And in all but a few cases, when we'd read the fine print and look at the rules and look at the contracts, it was literally illegal to take the money and run. And, of course, taxpayers started going nuts, and a few mayors and governors sued. Usually they lost when they sued. Just a few of them won. But the vast majority of deals, you know, taxpayers were just out of luck. There was no meaningful protections.
Well, what does this CUNO decision, I mean, it looks pretty grim on its face. What does it do to the effort to get some accountability in this process?
Yeah, the CUNO case was based on an obscure constitutional theory. There's a part of the U.S. Constitution called the Commerce Clause. It was put in there by the Founding Fathers to give power to the federal government, especially to Congress, to regulate commerce among the states, because under the Articles of Confederation, before the Constitution was written, the states were really acting more like countries. They were imposing tariffs on each other and really trying to put up economic moats around themselves. So the theory of the Commerce Clause is that states can't interfere with each other's commerce. They can't do things that amount to tariffs or discriminatory tax schemes that discriminate between states. So the theory of the Cuno case was that by bribing Daimler Chrysler to stay in Ohio, Ohio was interfering with Michigan's commerce because the plant said it might go to Michigan instead of Ohio if it didn't get the huge subsidy package. That's the theory of the case. It's kind of an odd theory. It's not a part of the Constitution that people think about a lot. But according to the attorneys who launched the case, there's a lot of history, even in the Rehnquist court, making decisions that would have supported this theory in this case. What happened 2 weeks ago when the court came down with the decision, 3 weeks ago, is that they did not rule on the Commerce Clause at all. They simply, on a procedural matter, threw the case back to a state court in Ohio. They ruled that the plaintiffs, the taxpayers, the homeowners, the small business people in Toledo who were the victims of the process there, did not have the right to sue in federal court. They did not have standing. And so now the case begins all over again in state court in Ohio, where it actually began 6 years ago.
We
don't have any resolution on this constitutional issue.
Right, but it was Daimler Chrysler that moved it into federal court in the first place. Am I correct in that?
You are correct. I mean, this is a cynical bit of lawyering that went on. The plaintiffs, the homeowners, the small business people sued in state court, expecting that eventually the case would get appealed into federal court because of that part of the case that concerned the federal constitution. But the original case was all about state laws, not federal laws. And it was the company, both the state and the defendants, the Daimler Chrysler and the state of Ohio, who dragged the case into federal court. And they didn't make any claim about standing until they lost at the Circuit Court of Appeals 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. So it's a very, I'm quite, a cynical bit of lawyering, in my opinion, that they would basically sort of shop for a more favorable form and then suddenly claim, oh, the case doesn't belong here.
So it's gonna start over again. There's no chance that Ohio and Daimler Chrysler can engage in that cynical lawyering again and re-remove it.
No, I mean, now they'll have to face the state court process, and presumably the plaintiffs will appeal again on the federal issue to the Sixth Circuit, and it's the same Sixth Circuit that ruled in their favor on the constitutional issue a year and a half ago. So the last word has not been heard, but the problem is it takes so long. It'll be years.
Yeah, absolutely. It's
Supreme
like something out of a Dickens novel, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
there are two other cases, one in North Carolina and one in Minnesota, both in state court as well, but also both using the Federal Commerce Clause theory. And the lawyers in those cases certainly hope to be heard on the federal issue as well.
Do you expect more cases beyond those two to come down? Is this? I guess what I'm asking, Greg, is this a movement now?
I think it's a little too soon to say it's a movement. There's certainly a lot of people who took notice of this case. It got a lot of attention, mostly on the corporate side. Frankly, there was an enormous amount of corporate briefs filed in support of Daimler Chrysler in the state of Ohio. But there have been a number of other attorneys in other states, public interest lawyers, tax justice lawyers, looking hard at this theory and talking among themselves about what might be possible. Frankly, we're a little discouraged right now, though. It was not a very favorable outcome. So.
No, it wasn't, and it was a 9-0 decision to boot.
Yeah, yeah. But again, just on this right to sue, this standing.
Yeah,
on the
taxpayer standing issue.
Yeah.
Well, let me shift back a little more toward grassroots things, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of the program this evening, I referenced the fact that there's a lot of irony. I broadcast from West Virginia, but I happen to be on a remote location down here in Alabama right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is the anniversary of D-Day today.
Oh.
Here in Florence, Alabama, we have it's a lovely place that sits right on the Tennessee River. It's called Veterans Park, and it's dedicated to the memory of veterans past and present who have served this country.
Mm.
This evening, the city council was voting on whether or not to put a Bass Pro Shop.
Oh, dear.
In the middle of Veterans Park.
Oh, my goodness.
Under the theory of, those two words, economic development.
Mm-hmm. What community in Alabama is this again?
Florence, Alabama.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I've talked to a lot of people down here. I have yet to meet a single human being who thinks it's a good idea.
Yeah.
But the problem is, and I think this may be something you see on a nationwide level, and ultimately the source of my question. It's like a rain man in the 19th century coming along, going to make it rain and make the crops grow.
Mm-hmm.
An economic development consultant comes into a town, and they're usually tied in with one or more different businesses. Maybe it's Cabela's, maybe it's Bass Pro Shop, could be it's Walmart or the people who develop it.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, we're going to bring jobs. And the city council or the county commission, their hair stands on end and says, jobs. Well, I can campaign on jobs.
Right.
How do you turn the light on for these guys, Greg?
It's there's no silver bullet, I'm afraid to say. I mean, in this book I wrote last year, The Great American Job Scam, I try to peel away all the different pieces of the scam. Part of it is exaggerating the benefits of the deal. Part of it, of course, is hiding and downplaying the cost of the deal. So when you exaggerate the benefits and hide the costs, it's easy to make these deals look better than they really are. Cabela's and Bass Pro, very unusual story going on right now. I don't know if you know. Cabela's is number one, Bass Pro is number two in the outdoor sporting goods market. Number three is a company called Gander Mountain, based out of the Twin Cities. And several months ago, Gander Mountain basically declared war on subsidies being offered to Cabela's and Bass Pro. Cabela's especially, a publicly traded company, you know, so it really has to show what it's doing, has openly announced that getting economic development incentives for these huge mega stores they build is part of their business plan. They talk about it at great length in their shareholder disclosure documents. They just, in West Virginia, you may have heard, cashed out $53 million from a tax increment financing bond deal that they received up in Wheeling a few years ago.
Yes, Ohio.
So that they could spend that money to build stores elsewhere. And taxpayers are literally building that place for them over time in I don't know if it's property and sales tax or one or both.
So in the end, West Virginians built the Cabela's.
Yep.
And now West Virginians are building a Cabela's in New York.
Or wherever their next store is, yeah, because
right.
The company, you know, very openly, you know, crowed in its press release about so-called monetizing the economic development bond. That is, getting cash out of it, you know, now, ahead of time. Quite a remarkable thing.
Is there any litigation planned around this? That sounds like outright stealing.
Well, I mean, it's not any different than a long-term bond playing out. The unique thing is that they have figured out a way to pull the cash out earlier, apparently. I'm not aware that other companies do that with great regularity. So, you're in Alabama, for instance. Alabama has an extremely generous system of corporate income tax credits where it says if you meet a certain requirement in terms of the number of dollars you spend building a new facility there, you can get a credit against what you would normally pay for corporate income taxes, a credit equal to 5% of your investment, and you can get it every year for 20 years. Well, 20 times 5 is 100%. So over 20 years, if you have enough taxable income to cover it, the state of Alabama will pay for your factory completely by not collecting income taxes from you.
And yet at the same time, the state of Alabama has the most punishing state income tax. I think they begin income taxing income at around $9,000 or $10,000 on individual workers.
Yep.
So in the long run, once again, I mean, those are the poorest of the poor, literally amortizing a note for a manufacturer.
Yep. And obviously everybody thinks that Mercedes got the rich deal, and they certainly did get a rich deal there back in 93. But the law and the huge corporate income tax credits that were enacted as part of that package have since been enjoyed by many other companies. So it's a very regressive situation there.
So getting sort of returning full circle to goodjobsfirst.org, you said it's a resource. Is there a kit there? Is there a package? Is it just information? How can people sort of empower themselves by going there?
Mm-hmm. There are definitely lots of toolkit materials there. There's a whole section of the website you can access right from the front called Accountable Development, and that will take you to several key things that people use every day. We get many tens of thousands of hits on our website every month. There's a research manual called No More Secret Candy Store. There's a basic primer on accountability and the basic kind of safeguards we talk about, safeguards like disclosure, you know, so everybody can see the costs and benefits of every deal every year. Clawbacks, as I talked about, money-back guarantee language, how to write a clawback contract. Job quality standards, that is wage and health care rules. Most states now, for at least a few of their programs, do require companies to pay a certain wage and full-time jobs and health care. And that's a very rapidly growing safeguard that we see at the state and local level. We have model legislation that people can adapt to their state or city for all those purposes. And then we have case studies and campaign victories and a news service on the front of our website that we update every week with major fights going on and major useful precedents from campaigns around the country. So it's very, very much full of things ready to print out and send away and use for grassroots empowerment.
Well, I think maybe it might be good to flesh this out a little bit. This is not to suggest that you're necessarily anti-development or anti-economic development or anti-business coming to any particular town.
I'm glad you made that point. No, we're certainly very much pro-development. We're just pro-fair development and pro-smart development. We think if there was more information, if our public officials really had a level playing field when they negotiated with these companies, if the deck was not stacked against taxpayers the way it is today, we could be spending less money, doing better deals, getting better results, have a stronger tax base, and promote better public services. And here's another angle to this whole debate. I make the point over and over again in the book that it's not just that we're giving too much money to these companies when it really doesn't make a difference, and we're paying them to do what they would have done anyway. But there's real cost to not using that money in ways that we know really could be good for the economy. And at the top of that list would be skills, which is to say everything from pre-kindergarten through, you know, K through 12 and GED and ESL and, you know, help for dislocated workers and college grants and, you know, lower tuition bills. And infrastructure. Our nation has a desperate, huge infrastructure deficit. One of the ways we've been papering over all these termites in the budget all these years is letting our physical plant run down, our water purification plants and our roads and bridges and our dams and locks and our electrical grid. So we could make a lot of jobs repairing our infrastructure. We absolutely need to upgrade our skills set, especially because we're about to start losing all of our baby boomers, right? Our boomers start hitting the exit doors in big numbers in just two more years. People born in 1946 turn 62 in 2 years from now, and we know statistically that's when a lot of them start to retire. So we desperately need to save some of this money that's being wasted today and put it into skills and infrastructure, because that will produce good results. And we, given the reality of our labor force age patterns and the condition of our infrastructure right now, that's the best thing we could do to improve our business climate.
And I think there's another side to it as well, Greg. I don't like competition is one thing, but I don't like the fact that you get, say, old Indiana and Tennessee and perhaps Arkansas all at each other's throats trying to outbid in a downward direction their own people.
I'm very critical of the governors on this account. You know, I mean, obviously it's the responsibility of the executive branch to lead on this function. And the last time that the National Governors Association even debated this issue was 13 years ago in 1993. They have not done anything about it since. The last time I interviewed the top staff of the NGA to check in with them as I was writing my book last year, they kind of blew me off and said, well, you know, it's globalization today. It's all about globalization. You know, that war among the states, that's old hat. This is right in the middle of the episode in which 21 states are competing for the new Boeing Dreamliner deal that ended up in Washington State.
Where it was probably going to be in the first place.
Exactly.
That's where Boeing is.
Where Boeing already has most of its workforce. And the point I wanted to say to him, but he cut me off, was, all right, globalization is a reality. There's no doubt about that. But in my opinion, it makes it all the more urgent that the states cooperate with each other, because when companies decide whether or not to stay in the United States or go to China or India or Mexico, they're not looking at Tennessee versus Arkansas versus West Virginia or Mumbai. They're looking at the United States or India or United States or China. They're looking at the states as a unit.
Well, and didn't we see that with Toyota's decision recently to locate in Canada as opposed to the United States?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they reportedly, Toyota locating its most recent auto assembly plant, looked at the skill level, especially in southern states where it might have gone, and healthcare costs, with our skyrocketing healthcare costs here, compared to Canada's single-payer system, much more cost-effective, and Canada's higher skill levels, and they put the plant in Ontario.
Well, it seems fairly obvious to me what the answer is. What kind of success are you having? Any?
We're having quite a few successes. I mean, today we have 12 states with company-specific reporting disclosure. 4 states are even reporting information on the web. You have a fairly good disclosure system there in West Virginia. It's actually been on the books for quite a while. Most states, as I mentioned, now, for at least a few of their incentive programs, attach wage and health care standards. That wasn't at all true even 8 years ago. Most big deals in many states and many localities today do use clawbacks, do use money-back guarantee language, especially on big, high-profile deals. That was absolutely not true at all 20 years ago. It's really because of the plant closings movement that we've begun to tighten up that loophole. And we've got some companies out there doing the right thing. I mean, Toyota not only, although they went to Canada for that deal, the previous deal, they went to San Antonio, despite a subsidy package there that was worth about a third as much as Mississippi offered them for the same facility. And they were very clear up front, and I don't mean to single out any one company here, but they were clear in saying, we don't think it's smart to milk the public system that much. We think it's better that you keep some money in the public system and benefit from having good skills and infrastructure by not taking so much tax revenue out of the community that you locate in. Certainly, we have a number. We know now, for instance, that increasingly people fighting Walmart stores and Walmart distribution centers, but especially Walmart stores, are using the issue of economic development subsidies as part of their site fights. We did a big report documenting $1 billion in subsidies to Walmart facilities a couple of years ago, and we know from press clips and we know from calls that we get almost every week now that people are using the leverage of taxpayer subsidies to fight these facilities more often than they ever did before. So, and likewise, there's a small but growing number of local coalitions, the labor community coalitions, especially inspired by a group in Los Angeles called the Los Angeles Alliance for New Economy, out there winning these things called community benefit agreements. That is, they're winning in exchange for subsidies. Developers are agreeing with local coalitions of unions and community groups and environmentalists to make big concessions on some of these projects to really make sure that the projects benefit people in the adjacent neighborhoods. That is, local hiring preference, living wages, affordable housing set-asides, public parks and other recreational spaces. People are getting very savvy about organizing to use these things as positive leverage to make deals better.
Well, that is inspiring, Greg, because what we've seen, you mentioned Walmart. The past Walmart model was, you're in Walmart, they're in there for 5, 10, 15 years, and they leave that big, ugly, empty box and build a new big box.
Yep.
And it's a big asphalt space.
Yeah.
And what you were talking about, green spaces or affordable housing. I think you're describing a system in which grassroots organizing really can pay off, and people can see tangible results with the added benefit of building community.
Absolutely. I mean, the point we make to people is, look, this money is everywhere. The average deal today involves 8 or 10 or 12 different kinds of subsidies. But the fact that the money is everywhere, taxpayer money is everywhere, our money is everywhere, means we have leverage everywhere. We have a right to say how these things should look, and by using our power in that money.
And, of course, they're at goodjobsfirst.org. I'm sure you're more than interested in hearing the success stories of people who do engage in this kind of self-empowerment, right?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure. I'm sorry it's been so long getting us together, but this is an issue that's near and dear to me, and we'll keep an eye on the website, and when the next success rolls around, I hope you'll share it with us.
Thanks so much, Bob.
All right, take care, Greg.
Night night.
Bye now. Greg LeRoy, author of The Great American Job Scam, and originator over at goodjobsfirst.org. Drop by if you've got one of these economic boondoggles coming to your area. Take advantage of the resources that are there. It's about you. It's about all of us. It's about a chance to make things better and to make a real future. And if you want the book, as I noted, go over to whiterosesociety.org. And go through a portal to a bookseller. Order it. Read it. It's a great read. We're going to take our news break a little bit late right now. When we come back, your phone calls at 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. A package of incentives that represents a major initiative by world powers to persuade Iran to curb its nuclear program contains, quote, positive steps, end quote, but also, quote, ambiguities, end quote, the country's top nuclear negotiator said Tuesday, speaking on state television after receiving the proposals from EU foreign policy chief Javier Solana. Ali Larijani called the talks with Solana constructive and said Iran would respond after studying the incentives. The United States, along with four other veto-wielding members of the UN Security Council, Britain, France, Russia, and China, drew up the package with Germany in a meeting in Vienna on Friday. Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman John Warner is frustrated with the Bush administration over how his committee learned about the Haditha inquest, and he's demanding answers about why it took 2 months for the White House to tell the committee what it knew about the killing of 24 Iraqi civilians by U.S. Marines. The Virginia Republican has pledged to hold open hearings on the military's conduct after Congress reconvenes. Warner and members of the Armed Services Committee were not made aware of the Haditha investigation until May 18th, 2 months after the White House found out about the killings in March, according to a Warner aide. A coalition of veterans groups charged in a lawsuit Tuesday that their privacy rights were violated after thieves stole personal data on 26.5 million military personnel from a Veterans Affairs employee. The class action lawsuit against the federal government filed in U.S. District Court in Washington is the second suit since the VA disclosed the May 3rd burglary 2 weeks ago. It demands that the VA fully disclose which military personnel are affected by the data theft and seeks $1,000 in damages to each person, up to $26.5 billion total. The veterans are also asking for a court order barring VA employees from using sensitive data until independent experts determine proper safeguards. Billy Preston, the exuberant keyboardist who landed dream gigs with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and enjoyed his own series of hit singles, including Out of Space and Nothing from Nothing, died today. Preston's longtime manager, Joyce Moore, said Preston had been in a coma since November in a care facility and was taken to a Scottsdale, Arizona hospital Saturday after his condition deteriorated. Billy Preston was 59. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Hey everyone, it's Dar Williams. I just signed on to a new program called Empower. If you think you or a friend might have a mental health problem, call 1-800-969-6642 or visit empoweryouth.org.
American and British veterans marked the 62nd anniversary of the D-Day landings today with ceremonies and talks to school children about the invasion that changed the course of World War II. Hundreds of relatives and others joined at least two dozen veterans to remember the June 6, 1944 invasion on Normandy's beaches that helped free France and much of Europe from Nazi Germany's grip. Former Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge laid a wreath along with the U.S. Ambassador to France at the American Cemetery in Colliery-sur-Mer, where thousands of crosses and stars of David mark soldiers' graves on a finely groomed lawn. Police found 9 severed heads today in fruit boxes near a volatile city northeast of Baghdad, authorities said, the second such discovery in less than a week. A roadside bomb also exploded near an American military convoy in central Baghdad, killing a woman and wounding 3 pedestrians. The 3-vehicle convoy was traveling near one of Baghdad's bus stations when the bomb detonated. The convoy kept moving. The boxes containing the heads, all from men, were discovered by a highway in the village of Hadid near Bakuba, a mixed Shiite-Sunni Arab city 35 miles northeast of Baghdad that has seen a recent rise in sectarian violence. The Federal Bureau of Investigation has refused to turn over 89% of Vice President Dick Cheney's FBI records in response to a request for the records under the Freedom of Information Act. In all, the Bureau has released 112 of 1,061 pages reviewed during a 2-year investigation following a request by San Francisco blogger Michael Petrelis. Petrelis filed the request prior to the 2004 election. Portions of nearly all the pages released have been redacted. There's a time and a place for everything, local Australian governments have ruled as they move to stop brothels opening near cemeteries. Local governments in the northern state of Queensland have called on state authorities to establish an exclusion zone banning brothels opening within 220 yards of cemeteries. It follows a decision by a council in Ipswich, just outside the Queensland capital of Brisbane, to reject a proposal for a brothel to be built across the road from the local cemetery. For the Head-On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Tonight's final hour of Head-On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Welcome back. Great conversation there with Greg LeRoy, and well worth running over the top of the hour as far as I was concerned. Hope you shared the same sentiment. About 24 minutes past the hour as we roll through toward the end of this Tuesday night program. I wanted to share something with you that came in the email from our friend Andy, not Andy in Wales, Andy in the Netherlands. We're getting to where we've got just about as many Andys as we have Davids. But Andy in the Netherlands says, please allow me to be a stick in the mud to the Christian Satanists out there. Today is not 666. It's actually 668. This is because 06 is not a year. 2006, however, is. And in numerology, you add up the individual numbers. In this case, 2 plus 0 plus 0 plus 6 equals 8, and therefore today is 668. 66-2004 was, on the other hand, 666, and so was 1998, namely 666 plus 666 plus equals 1998. And in each case, he has not come back, so blah, blah, blah to the whack jobs out there. Thanks, Andy. Of course, we all know who the beast is. You know, was it Revelation chapter 13? Same chapter where he talks about he'll be wounded in the head and recover from a grievous head injury. We saw the bruise from Pretzelgate. We know what's going on here. Dear leader, going down to, for God's sakes, going down to Laredo, Texas today? You know how my mind works. I saw George Bush, Laredo, Texas, and I immediately flashed on that great old cowboy song. As I flew over the streets of Laredo. No, never, stop it. Just stop. I'm not going to sing. But then there's that soundbite. I'm sorry, I don't have it. When I get back to the wild, wonderful, undisclosed location, we'll start doing a few more things like this. But I saw dear leader deliver this line about, I came down here to Laredo because I wanted to talk to some Border Patrol agents again. And you know, the five and a half long tortured years of listening to this miserable, idiotic prattle out of this darn fool. And you just want to, what? Is the executive branch not paying its phone bill? Vonage is a pretty good bargain. Somebody get the president Vonage and give him the phone number to the Border Patrol office in Laredo, Texas, for God's sakes. Now I don't know, but I don't know what you're paying. It may be a little bit. I may be in a little bit better shape here than some of you elsewhere. $2.71 a gallon for unleaded regular. Anybody know what jet fuel's going for per gallon these days? I know it's basically kerosene, but not quite. Well, somebody buy dear leader a phone card, okay, please? Now we just had a long conversation with a really good guy working hard to help taxpayers save their own money. Whether it's a Jeep plant or a Bass Pro Shop, or for God's sakes, Cabela's, great big hunting wonderland. But Walmart, you know, this giveaway development. People are trying to save their own money. And saving their own schools and their own roads and bridges, and you get the idea. But it kind of feels like being perpetually behind the freaking eight ball. Because the President of the United States gets on a 747 in Washington, D.C., and flies to Laredo, Texas, and then stands in front of cameras and said, I flew down here because I wanted to talk to some Border Patrol agents. There's another. Hey, there's another little fun little protest. Let's everybody. No, we got to. Somebody send George Bush a phone card. George, save the taxpayers some money. Stay the hell home. Pick up the phone. You're the president of the United States. You got the NSA not 20, 30 miles from you. They can get you any phone number that you want, George. Call the Border Patrol. I bet Border Patrol agents even have cell phones. You could probably, George, you could put your little honorary Border Patrol suit on and spiffy up the badge and put your hat on and stand there in the Oval Office. And I bet you could call a real live Border Patrol agent who was standing on the border, George. Jesus criminy. Yeah, I came down here because I wanted to talk to some Border Patrol agents. It makes the head hurt. It does. It just makes the head hurt. Well, we are halfway. We got about another half hour of the program left. If you want to jump in, feel free. The phone number, of course, you know, 877-443-2366. 877, the number 4, head on. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Labor Report for the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bruce Birch. The huge fund that's meant to preserve Norway's oil wealth for future generations is pulling out of shares that don't meet the government's ethical standards. Among them is the Walmart discount store chain. Norwegian Finance Minister Kristin Halvorsen revealed Tuesday that two new stocks will be banned from the country's so-called oil fund, which is now called the Norwegian Government Pension Fund Global and currently is worth about US $250 billion. It ranks as one of the biggest pension funds in the world. The ministry reported that it's excluding Walmart Stores Incorporated, Walmart de Mexico, and Freeport Moran Copper and Gold Incorporated from the fund, in line with recommendations from the Council on Ethics for the fund. Halvorsen's finance ministry officials cited serious and systematic violations of human rights and labor rights as its reason for pulling out of its Walmart investments. Elected officials rarely interfere in internal union matters, but more than 90 elected officials are so concerned about corruption charges involving a union representing New York City school bus drivers, they want the union's parents to hold hearings on how the local organization is being run. Lawmakers say that public hearings are necessary because after last year's indictment of three top officials, little has changed at the union's local 1118 of the Amalgamated Transit Union. Lawmakers, including Representatives Charles B. Rangel, Carolyn B. Maloney, Gerald L. Nadler, Jose E. Serrano, and Major R. Owens, have scheduled a joint news conference at City Hall Sunday to discuss their request for hearings. AirTran Holdings Incorporated, subsidiary AirTran Airways, on Monday agreed to a 5-year contract with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters Local 528 Union. The contract has to be ratified by the 500 AirTran employees represented by the union, about 400 of which are aircraft mechanics and inspectors. The union representing 2,500 employees at four television stations owned and operated by NBC Universal, has voted to authorize a strike. The National Association of Broadcast Employees and Technicians of the Communication Workers of America has been negotiating with NBC Universal since its contract expired March 31st. A strike date was not set, union spokesman Jeff Miller said. Members at KNBC in Burbank, California, WNBC in New York City, WRC in Washington, D.C., and WMAQ in Chicago approved the strike authorization by a solid margin, the union announced Monday. This has been the Labor Report for the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bruce Birch.
C minor. Put it in C minor.
Where have all the good men gone, and where are all the gods? Where's the streetwise Hercules to fight the rising wars? Isn't there a white knight upon a fiery steed? Late at night, I toss and I turn and I dream of what I need.
I need a hero. I'm holding out for a hero till the end of the night.
And the end of the night is pretty nearly where we are. I'm Bob. This is Head On. And let's do go to the phones. Gene is with us, calling from Oregon. Hey, Gene, welcome to the show.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, I guess I'm okay. I actually got to see Greg Pelless last night.
Did you really?
Yeah, he was at the First Unitarian Church downtown, and he spoke there. And,
did you get the book?
Yeah, I did buy his book. And it was kind of interesting because you mentioned the voting thing earlier, and he had stated in the talk with him that if you were a legal U.S. citizen of Mexican descent, you were, 500% more likely not to have your vote counted than if you were white? So, you know, and then you were telling about your father having to present ID, and I thought to myself, why do they worry about, you know, it's like, this is so ridiculous to have to get to show an ID just to prove that you're a legal resident of this country. It's disgusting. It's annoying as hell. And so it really
is.
Making me mad.
And of course, I got an email today, Gene, from Greg Pallast asking people to purchase his book because it's, today was set up as the battle of the political book giants, because both his book and Ann Coulter's were both released on this day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, very interesting. And, of course, I think I sent you a mail about, she actually said something on some show about how
yeah, she was on the Today Show.
Huh?
She was on the Today Show.
Yeah, so you saw that then?
Yes.
Oh, God. Well, the video clip is there if you want to just do that. But I do have one question for you.
Yes.
Now, I don't understand this. I mean, I grew up in a fairly religiously devout home.
Mm-hmm.
And we tended to, you know, anything we hear about surveillance, it's like, oh, it's the mark of the beast, all that jazz. So what I don't get is there all these good Bible-believing Christians out here that support Bush, and yet they're getting all this stuff. Why is that? How come they can, you know, string it in that and swallow a camel, as my mother used to say?
Well, and that's exactly how they are. And it's born, Gene, out of their hypocrisy. Most of the people I know who take their faith very seriously would not cross the street to speak to George W. Bush or any right wing Republicans. You know, whether it's any of these freaks, this Rod Parsley, Joel Osteen, Kenneth Copeland, James Robison, Pat Robertson, the whole filthy litany of them, Gene, there's not as much Christianity in in their entire collective body masses as there is in my toenail clippings. Not to be gross, but, you know.
It amazes me because for years and years and years you hear about all this kind of stuff. And now it's here and it's like, we'll do something about it later. We're too busy doing whatever right now. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that at you. And you have a good night.
Well, thank you, Gene. You too.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And Gene went to see Greg Palast last night. It's a nationwide tour he's on. I'm going to try to get him on the program at some point. We've talked to him in the past. And hopefully give him an opportunity to expand on some of the stuff that's in his new book. But as I noted, his new book is being put up head-to-head against Ann Coulter's The Hateful New Screed. I don't even know what the title of that thing is. But she got out, dusted off the little black dress today and went on the Today Show with Matt Lauer, who, interestingly, had time enough, well, you know, it's election day, had time enough to talk about Ann Coulter's new book, but not so much on election fraud, but never mind. It's not like we expect real journalism of Matt Lauer. You got to understand, and we're going to run this stuff from time to time, and it makes me feel dirty, and I feel like I need a shower after I've run it. She's just such a hateful witch. And the witches out there can calm down. I'm sorry. What can I call Ann Coulter that won't offend somebody that I really kind of like? Shrew? Yeah, I like, you know, cute little animals. Shrew. Brother. Anyway, she shows up on the Today Show today, and her job is to say hateful things to reach as many people as is humanly possible, because the people that she considers her ideological compatriots won't have anything to do with her anymore. I mean, what was it, the Minnesota Republican Party or some state's Republican Party was going to have her there for their, what, Reagan-Lincoln Day dinner or whatever it is Republicans have in the dark and still of the night and eat rubber chicken. And they backed out. Not so much. Never mind. So she's not getting any traction there anymore. Her entire shtick revolves around being able to demonize and outrage people like you and me, progressives, liberals. So she did it. She tried to do it today on the Today Show with Matt Lauer, and given the foofraw, if you will, over. Now, it's not a foofraw. It's legit. The Department of Homeland Security and Michael Skeletor Chertoff deciding that, my God, New York City has no historical landmarks, but Omaha does. No insult to my friends in Omaha. She decided to go in and take her pointy little stick and put it in a pile of poo and give it a good stir and make it stink real good. Agnes, have you got that audio? Let's give it a try if you do, dear. Okay. Well, at any rate, it was the widows of 9/11 that she went after. She said they're enjoying their millionaire status. That they're enjoying their dead husbands. And if you're not, you know, if you're not paying attention, you could hear something like that and really, really shout loud enough to move the rafters. Well, it's not working. If you want to, you can go over to, I believe it was rawstory.com that had it. I wouldn't be surprised if Can of Fun had it or Crooks and Liars. If you're into it, you know, I go back and forth a lot of the time when we play this, you know, whether it's her or Glenn Beck or, you know, the King of Filth, Flush Flemball. I have real mixed feelings about running that kind of stuff. about giving up? Because the truth of the matter is, the oldest saying in the public relations business is very true even unto this day. There is no such thing as bad publicity. And it's sad, but it is in fact true. And I don't want to give that hateful thing any more than she's already going to have. But yeah, today it was about spitting on the people whose families lost in ways that many of us will never, God willing, be able to imagine on September 11th, who lost husbands, sons, wives, daughters, sisters, brothers, aunts, uncles, cousins, and in the most shocking and horrifying manners. She called the 9/11 widows self-obsessed, said they were reveling in their status as celebrities. And yeah, it's right there at Raw Story if you want to go watch it. Maybe we're better off if we just leave it the hell alone, huh? Let's take a break. If there's any last thing you want to get off your chest before the night ends, feel free to. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is the Head On Radio Network.
The president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard, and we could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Hey, yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
Apparently, on the right-hand side, on the right wing,
the leadership in the Republican Party is not so cozy with the pro-life movement. They say pro-life. That's bull. If they were pro-life, they wouldn't send people to die in battle. They're pro-life, you know, they would put money into a temporary aid for needy families, TANF, which is an entitlement. If they were pro-life, they would help with creating better pensions for us to live our remaining years in relative peace and serenity rather than having to work until you're 85 years old in order to make a living. If they were pro-life, if they were really, really pro-life, then we wouldn't be in the middle of a war. Bottom line. Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Hey. 3-4! 3-4!
So I really, you know, I really do love the way you all's mind work. I got an email here. I'm Bob, by the way. I got an email here from a listener with regard to my mentioning. You know, I mean, for God's sakes, dear leader had a flyboy suit. Remember it? You know, on mission accomplished. Sure. So yeah, he showed up in all kinds of other regalia. How long before he shows up in a border patrol suit? And so I get this in my email subject: in his little border guard suit, maybe he could have Condi polish the barrel on his big shiny pistol. Of course, that may be that may be the problem. That may be why Pickles is over. Eating the worm and drinking cheap mezcal at which hotel is she at in D.C. said to be won't have anything to do with dear leader. But like I said, I love the sense of humor that you guys bring to things. One last story before we wrap up for the night, okay? Just because in the midst of the great border debate, it would be beneficial, one would think. Of course, one might be wrong. It would be beneficial to know where the daggum border was. A new Fordham Institute study says 2/3 of the states don't sort of cut the mustard when it comes to standards for instruction in world history. You know how these studies roll out every now and then. There will be a study that says that Americans don't know squat about geography because they asked some kid where Afghanistan was, and he sort of reached over to somewhere to the right of Arab, Alabama, and a little bit north of East Aboga. There, Afghanistan count. And you know, there's a study about math that says that any higher math in America involving more than two hands worth of fingers and 2 feet worth of toes, and you know, we're out of luck. Got to get out the Texas Instruments graphing calculator. Well, there's another one from the Fordham Institute. A historian of some renown, a fellow by the name of Walter Russell Mead, performed this study. It's the first time ever that states' academic standards for teaching K through 12 world history, and I bring this up because you know how precious and important I think it is to know world history. You know, it's knowing world history that allows me to say that the Iraq War is a stupid little scenario, the way that Athens' invasion of Syracuse was a stupid little scenario, and it led to Athens' downfall. And you know, those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it, that whole thing? Sure. Mead says he's aghast, quote, at how poorly written and organized most states' world history standards are. And more than anything else, he's especially dismayed, shall we say, dismayed at our knowledge of our own hemisphere. We lack effective standards for instruction in the history and culture of the Western Hemisphere. You know, that's us. And he rated on a scale of 0 to 10 the individual states. Out of 50 states who, in regard to being prepared to teach the history of the Western Hemisphere, four states out of 50 got zeros. Alaska got a zero. Alaska, Inuit, you might call them Eskimos, significant population, they got a zero. Little Alaskan children, bupkis on the history of the Inuit. Idaho got a zero. Missouri got a zero. And Montana got a zero. 30 more states, you know, this was a 1 to 10 scale. 30 more states got no better than a 5. And that includes Florida. Florida got a 1. You know, where the only thing you have to know about Latin America and Florida is that Fidel Castro is a bastard and we need the sugarcane fields back. Right? This doesn't present a pretty picture. You know, Alabama got, Alabama picked up a 7. You know why Alabama got a 7? Because they have to teach about DeSoto. Because a bunch of DeSoto's wanderings were through this, what is now this state. Oh, this is pitiful. But, you know, what do you expect? I mean, we think we're the only Americans. How about Peruvians? Are they Americans? Do they live in America? Well, not really. No, I'm sorry. It's America all the way down to Tierra del Fuego and all the way up to Point Barrow. Jeez. Colorado scored less than 5. Texas got less than 5. Well, the Texas World History Plan is something like... See, this here's the picture of Sam Houston and General Santa Anna under the Liberty Tree. And what Sam Houston is telling General Santa Anna there is he can sign that there treaty or hang from that there tree. And that's it! Well, you know, I thought you might like a little something to ponder. So thank you all for joining this evening, sharing your time with us, with me, with the lovely Agnes who produced the program. It does mean a lot. Brian Reznor announces for us. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org has a new fundraiser underway. Do the right thing. And you know what that thing is, WhiteRoseSociety.org, because he maintains the streams and the archives of all the programs of the Head On Radio Network, as well as the archives of many other fine liberal talk programs. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computers, Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional. The computers don't do nothing without Peter says they do. John Fox is the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network, and he does it all the way from Sydney, Australia, so that should tell you how doggone good he is.